I was sitting in a laundromat recently, waiting for my clothes to dry, just watching people walk past the window. And I noticed that almost every face I saw looked like a lie. Not a malicious one necessarily. This is the kind of lie you tell because you don't have the energy to deal with the alternative. So it's the kind of face that reveals a person who's carrying around this heavy, invisible luggage of who we think we're supposed to be, and hoping that nobody asks us to open it. When you hear someone say, "Be yourself," to me that sounds like a threat disguised as a promise. Because if I were actually myself, the version of me that hasn't slept, or the one that finds social rituals to be a form of soft torture, that room would get pretty empty, pretty fast. And the older I get, the more I'm convinced that personality is really just a fancy word for a collection of scars that healed over into a shape that people find acceptable, more or less. We don't start out with these masks, though. When you're a kid, you're like a raw nerve, right? You're probably loud, you're weird, and you have these massive inconvenient emotions that don't care about the neighbors or the fact that your dad had a bad day at work. But then at some point, the world starts to correct you. It's not usually a big dramatic moment when this happens. It's the subtle stuff. I guess it's like the way the air in the room changes when you're being too much. So, for example, you see your mom's jaw tighten when you won't stop talking, or you see your dad's eyes glaze over when you're crying. You're small and you're perceptive, and you realize very quickly that your survival depends on their comfort. So you make them, if you make them uncomfortable, the connection thins out. And for a child, a thin connection feels like a death sentence. It's a biological ransom where you pay with your honesty to buy your safety. And we all do this to some degree when we're kids. So when I was a kid, I remember being told to stand in the corner until I was pleasant. This was a fairly standard punishment for growing up Gen X. Well, that and the belt, of course. But the subtext here is somewhat brutal because it's basically saying the version of you that's hurting, we don't want to see that. So go over there and hide it. Only the pleasant version of you is allowed to exist in the light. So you stand there. And you learn how to split yourself in half. And you build this caretaker self, which is this well-mannered, agreeable avatar that goes out into the world to handle being around humans. We think that we're being good and mature or easygoing, but really, what we're doing is we're just becoming highly skilled at self-betrayal, self-abandonment. Thus, trading our gut instincts for a seat at the table. And the tragedy is that once you've been doing this for 20 or 30 years, you don't even know you're wearing a mask anymore. You think the mask is your face. And you take pride in being the person who never gets angry, or the one who's always has it together, not realizing that those traits are just the walls of the prison that you built to keep yourself safe when you were 7 years old. Now, the problem is that the prison doesn't have very good ventilation. So you're in there, suffocating under the weight of everyone else's expectations, wondering why you feel so vacant, even when everyone tells you how nice you are. And the reason is because nobody actually respects you. They just enjoy the performance that you're putting on for them. And deep down, you know it. You feel that. Now, this could be why you're so tired, because it takes a massive amount of calories to keep a lie like that alive for decades. So the thing about being a people pleaser or a nice guy is that we treat it like it's a moral virtue, and we wear this self-sacrifice like it's a badge of honor. But if you look at the biology of it, it's less of a virtue and it's more of a slow motion suicide. I've spent a lot of my life trying to not be a burden on anyone, trying to be the guy who doesn't have needs, who never ever asks for help no matter what. And all that got me was weird knots in my shoulders and this strange sense of resentment toward people who didn't even know that they were upsetting me. Yeah. So there is a physician that you may be familiar with who's become quite well known lately, named Dr. Gabor Mate. He spent years working with people facing very heavy stuff, medically speaking, like cancer, ALS, chronic illness, and so forth. And he noticed something that should probably terrify all of us. So he found that the nicest people, the people who never say no, the ones who chronically repress their anger to keep everyone else happy, these were the people who were often the ones whose bodies just gave up. Because it turns out that your brain and your immune system are basically in a group chat together. And when you spend your whole life swallowing your no to protect your yes, what happens is your nervous system stays in a state of high alert. It's like running a car at the red line while parked in the garage. Eventually the engine is going to melt, right? And we think we're being polite, but our biology perceives it as a threat. When you have a gut feeling and you ignore it because you don't want to make waves at a social gathering, you're essentially telling your body that its survival instincts are wrong. Which means, in a sense, you're gaslighting your own cells. And after 20 or so years of doing that, the body stops trying to protect you from the outside world, and it starts attacking itself. And this is the ultimate irony, because you repressed your messy self to stay safe, and now your own immune system is the thing that's making you unsafe. It's like you can't win. I think about the way women in particular are socialized to do this. Women are taught from birth that their value is tied to their empathy and their ability to soothe others. So they're given dolls that they're told to nurture. And then we wonder why women have such higher rates of autoimmune diseases later on in life. And this is what happens when you're trained to be a lightning rod for everyone else's emotional static. In the medical world, this is known as a type C personality. And yeah, that sounds clinical, but it's actually a tragedy, because it's this rigid identification with duty and a total repression of self-protective aggression. So if someone steps on your toe and you apologize to them for you having your foot in the way, you're probably a type C. And though everyone at work might love you for this, your white blood cells are probably wondering whose side you're actually on. You know, it's a gritty reality to face that your goodness might actually be harming you. So health is something that we tend to think of as happening in a vacuum. You know, eat your kale, go for a run, don't smoke or drink, etc., etc. But you can drink all the green juice you want. If you're still carrying around the unexpressed anger of a 7-year-old who was never allowed to be sad, then you're still suffering. You're still toxic to some degree. The body is a snitch, and eventually it'll tell the truth that your mouth is too afraid to say out loud. So we take all this internal baggage, the repressed anger, the type C politeness. We take the terror of being found out, and then we do the most logical thing possible. We upload it to the internet. What could possibly go wrong? So in the old days, pre-internet, if you wanted to perform a fake version of yourself, you only had to do it for the family or your coworkers. You could go home and lock the door and be a miserable prick, in peace. But now we've built this 24-hour global stage where the audience never sleeps and where everything is a performance. And these days we've pretty much outsourced our need for attachment to an algorithm that doesn't give a shit if we're happy, as long as we're engaging. And I view this as a rather strange kind of hell, where we've reached this point where even our vulnerability feels like a product. I mean, nothing is sacred. And let's admit it, a great deal of social media content is performative. It's not actual vulnerability. It's a performance of vulnerability designed to buy more connection. We're still that anxious kid in the back of the classroom, holding our breath and watching the teacher's face to see if we said the right thing, hoping that we won't be ignored. Except now, the teacher is becoming an algorithm, and the grade is, it's like a heart icon or something. So basically, we've replaced the judging eyes of a 1950s neighborhood with something like a digital panopticon. And if you say the wrong thing, or you have the wrong thought, you don't just get sent to your room. You get exiled from the digital tribe altogether. So the stakes for being yourself have never been higher, which means the masks have never been thicker. And we all do this to some degree because it's just the nature of the context that we're in now. Because everything we do online might as well be done on the stage. Maybe you go to post something. And you pause with your thumb hovering over the screen and you're thinking, is this going to make people think I'm difficult? Is this going to alienate the 5 or 10 people I actually like? We are constantly editing our souls in real time now. And we are pruning the messy parts of our humanity because they don't fit into the brand of who we think we're supposed to be. But then, you know, if you realize that, you know, when you spend all your time curating a version of yourself that's lovable, and you end up, well, what's going to happen is you end up feeling more lonely than if you were actually alone. Because even when people love your posts or like your photos or whatever, you know deep down, they probably aren't really liking you. They're liking the avatar version of you. It's kind of like being hungry and watching a cooking show where you're getting all these delicious looking visuals, but you're still hungry because you're just getting visuals. Our civilization, it's less a community and more a shared trauma response. Or maybe we should just look at it as one giant trauma community. So from a certain perspective, we're all just terrified children holding up mirrors to each other, hoping nobody sees the person standing behind the glass. The person we are when the screens go dark is becoming a stranger to the person we display to the world. And this is an existential trap. We want to be known, but we're too afraid to be seen, truly seen. So we settle for being noticed, which is the cheaper synthetic substitute that leaves a bad taste in your mouth. All right, so we've got the fake social media life and the body that's basically a ticking time bomb of repressed resentment. Great. And therefore, naturally, we look for an escape. And for most of us, that escape is another person. Which usually means we go looking for the so-called the one. We don't call it religion anymore, but that's exactly what modern romance has become. So instead of trying to fill the void with a god above or what have you, we stare across the dinner table at some poor soul who's just as confused as we are. And we have this totally irrational expectation for our partners to be everything in one person. We want them to be our best friend, our therapist, our co-parent, maybe our business associate, and, you know, the ultimate moral arbiter of our existence. We want them to look at our own messy truth and tell us it's all fine, it's okay, while we simultaneously work overtime to make sure that they never actually see those truths. Because vulnerability is terrifying. And this is a recipe for disaster that moves at the speed of a glacier. I've seen this play out. I've lived it. I mean, most of us have. You meet someone and you put on the greatest hits version of yourself, the highlight reel, right? So you're charming, you're interested, you're low maintenance. You're the person who doesn't mind where we eat or what movie we watch or where we go. You're merging. And you want to fade into that person because if you're a part of them, then you aren't alone with yourself. Because being alone with yourself is unbearable. But then, eventually, you start to realize that you're losing your identity. And eventually, the emerging part of you, the part that actually has a personality and a set of needs, that part starts screaming from the basement. And you start feeling a weird, cold resentment building because they don't know who you really are, even though you're the one who's been hiding the map. So you blame them for not getting you, even though you've given them an inaccurate version of yourself to love. I think some aspect of romance has always involved being a survival strategy where the relationship gets used as a buffer against the existential dread of being an individual. It's like two people drowning who decide to hold on to each other. You might feel less lonely and terrified for a minute or two, but you're both still going down. And when you think about it, the weight that we put on our partners is actually kind of cruel. Because if we ask them to validate a self, or at least what we think is the self, that we haven't even had the courage to inhabit yet. You know, we want them to love the person that we're pretending to be. And then we feel like frauds when they actually do. Or worse, we get angry at them for falling for the act. And you know, a lot of this happens because we don't know who we are. And then there's the mystery. Real intimacy, I think it requires some degree of mystery. And mystery requires two separate people. But when you've spent most of your life merging to stay safe, you don't have an identity to bring to the table. You just have a reflection of what you think they want. And after a few years, the passion dies because you can't be attracted to a mirror. You can't have a spark between two people who have both negotiated their identities away for the sake of complacent peace. Now, I understand love isn't really about a feeling. It's about a choice. It's a decision that you make over and over and over again. But I think you still need to maintain at least some sense of that wild, unpredictable energy of two individual humans. And that energy shouldn't be completely traded in for the stale safety of a domestic contract. Attachment gets chosen over authenticity. And then we wonder why at some point the bed starts to feel so cold. It's because there aren't two people in that bed. They're just two agreeable exoskeletons trying to remember what it felt like to be alive. So, how do you stop being a ghost in your own life? I guess the standard advice is usually some flavor of start a gratitude journal or say affirmations in the mirror or something along those lines. But if you've spent 40 years building a reinforced concrete bunker around your soul, a post-it note on your bathroom mirror probably isn't going to do much for you. Unfortunately, the truth is a lot messier and a lot more expensive. I think the first thing you have to accept is that authenticity is going to cost you people. We talk about finding yourself like it's this beautiful and celebratory journey. But for most of us, the reality is it's a series of funerals. When you start setting boundaries and speaking from your gut, the people who were only in your life because they were easygoing, they're going to leave. And they'll tell you that you've changed or that you're being difficult. And they're not wrong. You are being difficult because you're no longer a convenient tool for their comfort. You have to be okay with being the villain in someone else's story if you want to be the protagonist in your own. And that's hard for most people. I've found that the most honest thing I can do in this situation is to practice what I call radical unpleasantness, which I suppose could be an aspect of radical honesty. And I don't mean being an asshole for the sake of it. I mean sitting with the absolute agony of letting someone be disappointed in you. Let yourself feel the physical vibrating anxiety in your chest when you say no to a request you don't want to do, and you don't offer a single excuse. You just let the no sit there in the air, awkward and heavy. Now, most of us will do anything to kill that silence because it's just so uncomfortable. Like, I don't know, fumbling around, apologizing, or we'll try to negotiate or something. But the healing is actually in that silence. The healing is in the relation that you can disappoint someone and the world doesn't actually end. And then there is the void. So when you stop performing, you're going to realize that you don't actually know who you are, because ultimately there is no you. You've been a reflection of other people's needs for so long that you realize the real you is a total stranger. And that's actually kind of petrifying. So, understandably, most people retreat back into their masks just to avoid that emptiness. But you have to stay there. You have to be bored. You have to be deeply uncomfortable and listen to the weird and dark thoughts that come up when the theater of your social life shuts down. And I think we should stop treating our gut feelings like they're just suggestions. If your body tenses up when a certain person walks into the room, that's not necessarily social anxiety. That's information. That's your nervous system trying to tell you something that your polite, socialized brain is trying to ignore. So I would try listening to the snitch. And if your stomach turns when you agree to a plan, pay attention, because that's your authenticity trying to claw its way out of the bunker. I think we have to realize that the idea of true love is actually kind of terrifying. We think we want to be loved for who we are, but being truly seen means all your flaws, your pettiness, all of your unlovable, messed up parts are on display. It's total vulnerability. It probably means that you don't know who you are. And it's much safer to be liked for a lie than to be loved for the truth. But the lie is going to be a lonely place to live. Look, I don't have a map for this. Nobody really does. It's just a process of going through the slow and clumsy trial and error where you're navigating the chaos of the human condition. So I think it's about being a little more honest today than you were yesterday and dealing with the fallout as it comes. And it's about realizing that the ugly and messy truth of being a human being is really the only thing that actually has any value. You know, the maps, the masks become dull. The performances are, you know, they're exhausting. I'd rather be disliked for the person I actually am than loved for the person I'm pretending to be. At least that way, when I'm sitting alone in a laundromat watching the world go by, I at least have some modicum of understanding of who's sitting in the seat. All right. That's all I have on that today. As always, thanks for listening.